Welcome to Earth Matters, environmental justice stories from so-called Australia and around the world. Produced at the studios of 3CR on Wurundjeri Woiwurrung country in Naarm, Melbourne, and broadcast across the continent via the Community Radio Network. I pay my respects to elders past and present of the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung and of the many lands our content reaches. I recognise that sovereignty has never been ceded. This always was and always will be Wurundjeri Woiwurrung land. And I affirm that there can be no environmental justice without justice for First Nations people across the globe. I'm Mia Audrey.
Generations of people here have worked in the coal-fired power stations. So to come along and say to them, listen, you're going to have to walk away from that and get into something else, it's pretty hard to get them engaged.
It's been 3 months since we sent a clear message at the ballot box. Climate action matters. When the federal election returned the government with a historic majority, a sigh of relief rippled through the climate movement. The result kept nuclear energy off the table and affirmed Labor's commitment to emissions reductions. We're expecting a more ambitious new target to be announced ahead of COP30 in November, while under coalition leadership, even our current target was at risk. Of course, targets mean little if we don't take steps to meet them. But Labor's renewable energy policies are cause for some optimism. We're likely to see accelerating electrification and increasing renewable energy storage capacity, more transparency in the renewable energy market, steps towards decarbonising the transport sector, more grants to support transitioning communities, the continuation of the Saving Australia's Bushland program, and with any luck, we'll finally get our national nature watchdog. That's the good news. We've also had plenty of reality check moments. We've seen the government approve Woodside's massive Northwest Shelf gas project extension, and the federal court rule that the Commonwealth doesn't owe a duty of care to Torres Strait Islander peoples to protect them from climate impacts or help them adapt. We've watched an unprecedented, climate change-driven algal bloom kill thousands of sea creatures in South Australia. Recent extreme weather on the east coast broke rain and wind records, and the Great Barrier Reef is hanging by a thread, just a pen stroke away from being added to the World Heritage Committee's in danger list. No one thought the work would end with the election, but every day there's a new reminder that we're far from where we ought to be. That while our leaders shirk responsibility, pander to polluting industries, strike backroom deals, and dilute crucial policies, the world is changing around us. We need to keep up the pressure. We need to look to the real leaders in this moment. Raylene Cooper, fighting for protection of rock art on her country against the impact of Woodside's mega project. Torres Strait Islander elders demanding climate justice, and organisers who unify their communities through healthful stories. Today, I want to share some reflections from grassroots organisers post-election. We need to keep mobilising, keep holding decision-makers to account, and sustaining these efforts means pausing at key moments to reflect, celebrate wins, and learn from what worked. We will hear from two speakers at a webinar organised by Friends of the Earth's Yes to Renewables Collective. Anna Makowitz, Yes to Renewables New South Wales organiser, hosted the session, and you'll hear her give an overview of the election outcomes. You'll then hear Anna in conversation with Adrian Cosgriff, a member of Nuclear Free Gippsland who used to work in the oil and gas industry. Later in the show, Ali Gerritsen shares about organising with Good for the Gong to support offshore wind projects in the Wollongong area. Here's Anna Makowitz of Yes to Renewables.
This election, as Dutton referred to it himself, was a referendum on energy. So how did that referendum play out? Well, Firstly, nuclear bombed at the ballot. Australians demonstrated that overwhelmingly they rejected Dutton's nuclear fantasy, especially as we will hear shortly, those communities that stood to be the most impacted by those proposed nuclear sites. Secondly, it was a vote for renewables. The country voted to see greater ambition on renewable energy, despite significant anti-campaigns and misinformation that we saw in key areas across the country. So, for example, the ALP's two-party preferred support increased in most seats with offshore wind debates, despite significant campaigns against the projects. Also, outside of the major parties, pro-renewables candidates and independents, lots of independents across the country, also improved their first preference vote. So it was a really good outcome for renewables. And as a result of this election outcome and the trajectory that we're now on, which is very different to the trajectory we could have been on, the Climate Council predicts that by the next election, Australia's main grid is expected to be more than two-thirds powered with renewables and storage. But as we know, behind this result, frontline communities were fighting hard for offshore wind and against nuclear. They were running creative campaigns, countering fossil fuel propaganda and misinformation, and mobilizing people to have rich and impactful conversations and influence the public discourse around energy, both locally in their regions and at the national scale. So we wanted to take this opportunity to reflect on all the work that went on behind the scenes at the grassroots level, to get the result that we got. And we want to shine a light on some of the work happening in communities across the country, to organize, to campaign, to listen and engage with complex community perspectives and voices, which is something that not all the candidates and MPs were doing, and to pressure MPs and candidates on energy and climate policy. And it's this work that's been so vital to securing us a renewable future, not a radioactive one. So Adrian is born and bred in Gippsland, oil and gas campaigner, sorry, oil and gas worker for many years, has been a member of Voices of the Valley and has been instrumental in the work done locally in Gippsland to fight off the proposed nuclear energy there. Adrian, I'd like to invite you to explain to us a little bit about that transition that you made from being a worker in energy industries to coming to campaigning and what the work has been like in Gippsland.
Okay, thanks, Anna. Yeah, good day, everybody. I've spent nearly all my working career in oil and gas, and the last 20 years on the oil rigs in Bass Strait, just offshore Gippsland. So, what people, not maybe everyone knows, is Latrobe Valley is the home of coal-fired power in Victoria, and as we know now, that industry is due to close. As is the oil industry offshore. It's also in the last years of life. So when Australia decided to go to net zero emissions, I immediately thought, well, okay, what does that mean for the valley? Because coal's been such a big part of the economy here. And so I started to ask the question, and there wasn't much public information available. No one seemed to be talking about it. Which was kind of frustrating me. In the valley, we went through a privatisation phase 30 years ago, and we lost about 7,000 jobs in a couple of years. So I looked at the future coal closing, and I thought possibly that could happen again. And well, we don't really want that to happen. So that's what initially drove me to want to know more. So because I couldn't get the information I wanted, I thought I'd better join a community group because generally they're really well connected. And so I joined Voices of the Valley because they were formed out of reacting to poor government response during the Hazelwood mine fire. So I knew they had plenty of experience and had the community at heart. So I joined them. And so that worked out pretty well because Turns out there was a bit going on, and through them I was able to learn a bit more. So I sort of joined, but it was sat there in the background because I'd never been in a community advocacy group before. I'd never done any public speaking or anything like that. So that was all good. And then all of a sudden, last year, this nuclear thing came out of nowhere. So we had a quick look at that and decided that it wasn't the best option for us. And despite trying to speak to our local member, because this is a very strong national seat, we were getting nothing. We were getting no policy detail from the government, etc. So we decided, well, we better fight against it. But we also realised that it's pretty hard as a little group when you're trying to fight a political party. So because Voices of the Valley had some really good connections across Gippsland, we all joined forces and formed the Nuclear Free Gippsland Alliance, which has been an absolutely fantastic experience. So, apart from being quite effective, for me personally, I've met a whole lot of people that I would probably have never met before. We came up with new ways to campaign. We learned a lot about how you engage community or try to, because as it turns out, it's very hard to engage community people, and especially in coal country like this. So people of generations of people here have worked in the coal-fired power stations. So to come along and say to them, listen, you're going to have to walk away from that and get into something else, it's pretty hard to get them engaged. So that was my background. That's how I got to this point. But as far as the alliance goes, I think all of us probably have learnt new ways of dealing with this. And I don't like to use the word activism so much, but we've found, as Anna will talk about in a minute, with the Nanas against nuclear, we've found new, better ways to engage the community. And I think if we can continue that going forward, possibly now with shifting to engaging Gippslanders about the benefits of renewables, it will probably go really well and be very effective. So yeah, that's my quick short history. Blue collar bogan from Traralgon that probably out of frustration more than anything else, thought the government's not doing enough, the community's not getting engaged, and look, the community definitely needs to step up if they want better outcomes than we've had in the past. So that's my story of why I got involved.
That's awesome. I love your focus on the relational aspect as well, because I think we hear that time and time again from people in communities about finding the right people who share your vision and, coming together, and that's how you build power. Can you tell us specifically what the Alliance was doing around the election? What kind of organizing tactics did you use? That photo from earlier. Was of that group all coming together somewhere?
So what we did is we kind of, while we came together, and it was largely environmental groups across Gippsland, to be fair. But as we all came together, we quickly realised that we've got a broad set of skills and resources. So we formed subgroups. So we had a letter writing group that wrote to the local newspaper and spoke to the media and all that sort of stuff. We had other people that have stalls at the local markets. We had people handing out doing letter drops to mailboxes, and then of course we had a couple of organised events like the photo you saw there. That was with the big nuclear barrel in the background. So that was a public peaceful demonstration in the main street of Traralgon. It was pretty effective. But one of the really biggest things we did is we had a information evening, because we'd had a couple of information evenings in the valley from nuclear pro groups that had come down and told about half the story and left all the bad stuff out. So in the end, we thought, well, let's have our own. So We hired a place in Marble and we had about probably 80 or 100 people turn up, and we had some really good speakers, and it was a warts and all question and answer session. So there was no filtering, no, you could ask what you like. There's also a website where we've followed up questions from the public to further that engagement for people to make it easier for them to learn. And of course, in my opinion, the star of all that is the Nanas Against Nuclear, because that is such a different, welcoming, engaging action that's not seen as protesting. It doesn't upset people. It's like talking to your nana. Come along, have a cup of tea, sit down, just have a chat about things. And that's been absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, what was the reception that you received? Like when you were thinking about doing the sort of town hall forum, were you concerned about like what kind of questions you might get or whether things might get antagonistic, and how did you kind of na navigate that?
Yeah, good question, because we had no idea how that would go. Through the Facebook pages, we know that there's certain individuals in the community that are there to cause a bit of trouble, and so we were concerned that some of them might turn up. So we had a security guy just in case sort of thing. But also, this is the other thing about this wide community group that we formed. There's a whole lot of really smart, skilled people in the community, really knowledgeable people. And so we were very comfortable with answering any question that was put to us, because we've got people who have science backgrounds, engineering backgrounds, all that kind of stuff, who are also a bit nerdy and have done loads of research. And so we were very confident that we could answer any question. And if we couldn't do it on the night, we backed it up via email after that sort of stuff. But yeah, turns out there were no activists, there were no cranky people there. I guess it was probably a bit of a pro renewables crowd, so it's always a bit hard to gauge that. But it was really successful. And one thing we all thought, because we did it, I think it was about a week before the election. If we were doing it again, it would have been good to do it a month before the election or something like that, because it probably would have got the community even more engaged, as people who went to it would have then talked to their workmates or their families or whatever, and we might have even spread the word further. So I think if we were to do something like that in the future, you'd probably do it earlier rather than later.
Yeah, that's a really good reflection, and one that that I've been hearing a lot from people who are doing stuff around the election. There's never enough lead time. But also, I just want to pick up on that point that you make about like people going and speaking to their families and people in their communities, and that the fact that you at the event, the speakers were kind of knowledgeable people from the community, because those voices, and the space that that creates to be with your peers, people who are from your region and your place and understand it, and understand the community, that's so much kind of stronger than someone else coming in, or the government coming in, or a big NGO coming in and saying and providing this information.
Adrian Cosgriff of Nuclear Free Gippsland, in conversation with Yes to Renewables campaigner Anna Makowitz about mobilising a fossil fuel heartland against nuclear power. You're listening to Earth Matters, Community Radio's National Environmental Justice Program. We're hearing stories from the front lines of the energy election about what unified communities in the fight for renewables. Next up, Ali Gerritsen on Good for the Gong's work reclaiming the narrative on wind energy projects in her area.
I'm sitting here today and I'm a little bit nervous because in very heavy rain, our house floods and water started to come in. So I'm looking over there and it's creeping towards me. My partner's rushed home to help lift rugs and furniture off the floor. And I also need to keep my phone on in case my daughter's school is evacuated. The school's on very low-lying lands beside a creek, and in these conditions, often spill over the banks. And it's these reminders that while fossil fuel companies profit, it's communities paying the cost. And as we're seeing up north, the cost is people's lives. So I want to talk now a bit about what drove me to action and join a local group. It was off the back of COVID when, like everyone, I was spending too much time on my phone. But unlike a lot of people my age who were being fed images of what skincare or makeup to buy next or bikini or whatever, I was being fed images of climate catastrophes worldwide. And this started to have a toll on my mental health. I'd be doing the daycare drop-offs, and any reference to the climate on the radio would have me in tears, and I'd have to explain it to my kids. It's really hard to explain. And I'm generally an even-keeled person, so they were worried, and I knew I needed to do something with these feelings. So Good for the Gong is where I landed, and it's a good place to be. It's a volunteer-run group of Wollongong locals who care deeply about climate change and the environment. We know that to help. Sorry, I need to collect myself. We know that to help ensure a safe climate, we need to move away from fossil fuels and adopt renewables like offshore wind. The reason Good for the Gong exists is because the community needed a way to address the mis and disinformation that was being circulated very early on in the piece by those opposed to offshore wind. This opposition to the project was really surprising because we're actually a very progressive area here. What we know is that the group opposed to offshore wind are, in fact, a relatively small proportion of the community. But they were very noisy on Facebook, and the way local journalists were covering stories amplified a division, and it wasn't helpful. So, although this panel is discussing what our groups have been doing throughout the election period, I want to be really clear that we've been working in this way for almost 2 years. And our focus is to provide evidence-based information that is accessible. We want to ensure that the community understands the benefits to come from living in a renewable energy zone. The main things I think that have been helpful are becoming more visible in the community. Many people think that the support is lower for offshore wind is lower than it is. So being visible means having Good for the Gong signs and stickers up, shirts on, and running accessible events and stalls in the community. We're really proud of these events. They've been really positive and meaningful, and I've met a lot of amazing people. We've also been able to demonstrate that in the form of some videos, which can be found on YouTube. These videos are of locals sharing why they support offshore wind. And these messengers of support are widely respected local faces who all do good in the community. Just recently, we started an Instagram. We realized that being solely on Facebook, we were only reaching one part of the community that still uses that platform. The debate feels particularly toxic on Facebook, but it's really not representative of the community and the conversations you have when you get out there. So we want to keep a presence there on Facebook to provide evidence-based information, but we also realized we need to be reaching other younger audiences. And the response we're having on Instagram has been so much more positive. The younger segment of the community will be most affected by climate change, so it's so important that we're sharing information there. We've also found that those who support offshore wind have been worried about having conversations without all the facts, which I totally understand. And it's been part of my journey as well, feeling, more comfortable over time to have those conversations, which can be a little more more challenging. So we've run events for people to learn more about offshore wind from experts so that they feel confident having those one-on-one conversations in their circles. And these conversations work best when we focus on finding connection. So yes, we both care about the environment. We've established this, and then going from there, small steps. It's been so important to focus on positive messaging. So the benefits to marine life, ensuring the highest environmental standards at all stages of the project, to prioritize local jobs and skills transfer, and to ensure that communities are included in the benefits. We've developed a community survey and have been sharing that widely, both online and in flyer format. So this is to ensure we're engaging the community on what's important to them throughout the process.
Ali Gerritsen on showing Illawarra communities that offshore wind projects can be good for the Gong. You've been listening to Earth Matters, Community Radio's National Environmental Justice Program. I'm Mia Audrey. Today on the show, we heard from organisers at the front lines of the renewable energy transition. The May election result was a clear sign that the community wants to see greater ambition on renewable energy and climate change. In the lead-up, communities fought hard, running creative actions, countering fossil fuel propaganda, and mobilising people to have rich and impactful conversations. As we often hear, what made the difference more than anything was connection. Everyday community members having conversations about their hopes and fears for the future. And the work is far from over. As May becomes a memory and we land back on this ailing earth, we are reminded that while they may acknowledge the reality of climate change, the Labour government is just the latest colonial regime under the thumb of climate-wrecking billionaires. So we recognise the real leaders, build power on the ground, and claw our way together towards safer futures. Audio for this episode was taken from Beyond the Ballot, a webinar organised by Friends of the Earth's Yes to Renewables campaign. You can view the full webinar on YouTube and learn more about Yes to Renewables via the Friends of the Earth website. I'll link both on the entry for this show at 3cr.org.au/earthmatters, where you can also catch up on other episodes. Earth Matters would like to thank the Community Broadcasting Foundation for their financial support and the Community Radio Network for getting the program out to you. Earth Matters is produced in the studios of 3CR, NAM, Melbourne. That's all for now, but tune in next week for more environmental and social justice stories.
Friends of the Earth Food Co-op is open. Get fresh produce and support local farmers and keep our grassroots community thriving through these unusual times. Organic veggie boxes and click and collect now available. Visit www.foefood.org/click-collect to place your orders. Or pop in store at 312 Smith Street and see how we're adapting with our new physical distancing layout. Shop organic and buy local. Made easy at Friends of the Earth. A proud 3CR supporter.
Slums in some metropolitan centres are coming down, condemned by forward-looking civic governments. Down are coming the bad living conditions that produce bad citizens.
The practical uses of asbestos are very numerous. At least 18,000 articles are made of it.
In the spring, the nature-loving Australian goes bush. The wife washes and the dishes dry themselves.
Amy is a serial pest.
Cities within cities, scientifically planned and built, where a man and his family with a small income can live with comfort and dignity as investments in democracy.
Kill your lawn and kick your fence. A show about how we live in the cities and suburbs and the ideologies behind them.
Fridays every fortnight at 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. on 3CR 855 AM.
It's from rubbish tip to you.